findanastrologer.com, the best astrologer database online. Search astrologers' bios, events in your area, featured articles, book reviews, blogs, MP3 downloads, video downloads, resources, and interviews. findanastrologer.com. Illuminate your journey.
Hi there. Okay, we have three astrologers here, one of which is me, David Cochran, and I have to my left...
Giselle Terry,
and to my right...
Stephen Forrest.
I'm just going to introduce this real quickly. We're going to compare and contrast some different views of astrology. We're all practicing astrologers in different ways. And Stephen inspired this idea, actually. And he noted that astrology nowadays has become a Tower of Babel as we've branched out into Hellenistic and Vedic. And Stephen, why don't you tell us about this Tower of Babel that we want to knock it down a little bit, I think is our idea.
Yeah, absolutely. This is one of my favorite topics. When I was a young astrologer, back in the 1970s, it felt like there was a common language that astrologers spoke, and we could all basically agree on certain fundamentals and then argue with each other and grow the field based on this communality of experience. But then as we got into the 70s and beyond, a kind of multicultural thing began to happen. And people began to study ancient astrology, which is wonderful and interesting, but very diverse. There's Hellenistic astrology and Arabic astrology and Renaissance astrology, all of which
are Vedic.
Exactly, the old stuff. And they're mutually unintelligible. And there's certain DNA in common. And then the computers came in, and we get harmonic astrology and lots of numerical analysis. Now it's like we're still motivated to argue with each other, but we don't even speak a common language.
I attended a
lecture in Hellenistic astrology, and I can't evaluate or comment because I just don't have the language. And it's confusing to me. It actually makes me smile in a way because I'm not sure what my position is about this. Mm-hmm. I think it's good that we celebrate diversity and we respect each other, but I also have the sense of little islands separating from each other increasingly.
And what happens to the new students? You, as one of the leaders in our field, and should be, in my opinion, you're getting confused. Now what happens to the new student who Hellenistic, Vedic, harmonics, it was hard enough back in the 70s when we had that shared language.
Yes.
Now I feel sorry for the new guys.
Me too, and the ones I feel most sorry for are the ones who think, well, I'll just try to do a little of everything.
Ooh.
I've never seen anyone pull that off.
And
it's just too
so
much.
So confusing.
You know what, we're here at the UAC conference, by the way, 2012, and I was involved in a pre-conference education thing, and that was one of the points I made, very striking, is we have this Avalon School, and we wanted to be academic and rigorous, and we wanted to be practical.
Right.
So we started showing them. We brought in great Vedic astrologer, we brought in, Dimitra George for Hellenistic, and so they start, and we wanted to give them a broad education, right?
Yeah.
Well, after doing this for 10 years, we've decided to change it.
Because it was too much for
them. It was too much because they want to be able to apply the idea.
It's the idea. And so, if you can't apply it, I mean, for me, if you can't apply it, then...
Yeah, and let me take this one step even further. Even within a language, back in the 70s, Aquarius was ruled by Uranus, and it was progressive and innovative and so on.
Yes.
Now you can go to four or five different, modern psychological astrologers, but they've picked up this new understanding that it really is a fixed sign, it was ruled by Saturn. So I can talk maybe to Stephen and maybe to Glenn Perry and maybe to Liz Green and several other major modern psychological astrologers, and there will be variation even within that language that we didn't have. So we've got, you might say, intra-group more variability, and then we have the islands all out there. So it's really... the separating islands.
Ever receding.
Yes, ever receding. So we're going to bring them together.
Yeah,
yay!
That's what we're here to do.
I've got an hour to do.
Looking for the possibility that there are connections that we fail to make because we identify ourselves as separate in some ways.
Yeah.
And maybe we're not so separate, you know.
Let's hope so.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to see, and we're going to try to be honest about it, right? Mm-hmm. We can be politically correct, and we can say, oh, yes, and underneath I'm thinking, you know.
Yeah, actually,
or,
there
you know,
are
whatever.
Big, but there are big differences.
There are differences. Yeah. You want to look at this?
I quote Bono here, and you too.
Yeah.
We are one, but we are not the same.
That's right.
If we are really not the same, and we need to admit that.
Yes, that's true.
So why us three? You know, I think this was Stephen's brainstorm. We started communicating over something.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what Stephen noticed is, you know, we know this, but you know, we just started emailing and going, my God, we really live in different worlds in terms of what I do when I look at a chart, what Stephen does, the philosophical assumptions. So, you know, we're very different. Maybe we should have more than just the two of us. Mm-hmm. And we thought of you, Giselle. Isn't that sweet of us?
We thought
of you because you've taken some of my classes and you took the harmonics DVD and you like it.
I love it.
Of course, you're modern psychological, so you're very well attuned to what Stephen does.
And I love what Stephen does.
See, and so you were the perfect person. And
And
also, let me say, I think what Stephen does is, in my opinion, very popular. He has 60, I don't know how many people are in your apprenticeship program. So
Vast number.
And, you know, this is not about ego or whatever, but he's very popular, deservedly so. I would say that I have more of a passionate small group, you know, that follows this more numerical, number crunching, closer to the scientific realm. So we're like a not vocal, but a conspicuous minority group.
Yeah.
So, you know, how does this extremely different scientific approach, which I think is relatively unpopular now, but one of the languages, compare? And what are our problems with each other? Or do we really have these problems? So I think maybe, and maybe Giselle will help negotiate the fights we get into.
We need a therapist.
We'll need your MFT.
Yeah, my MFT. I'll have to do some group therapy
here. Yeah, you also might need
we
might
couples.
We might need some bandages. So, you know. So where do we dig into?
Oh, Lord,
the Stephen versus David battle with our referee here, who can hopefully bring some wisdom to this. So many points of disagreement.
When I was a young astrologer, this is a little known fact, I don't talk about this too much, but it's no need to keep it a secret. The first astrology book I wrote, which was never published, was New Evidence for an Old Art. And I'd been working for the National Institute of Mental Health on a big sociological survey. And I was able to correlate people's responses to a bunch of social psychological questions with their sun signs, because we had birth dates.
Wow.
And I cut out all the dates that were transitional, where you weren't sure which sun sign somebody was, and found variations in their responses that were rather consistent with astrological theory. For example, when you walk into a room in which some people are ones you know well and others are strangers, do you mostly talk to the people you know, or are you eager to meet the strangers?
Mm-hmm.
And the cancers, you know, were off the scale for only the people I know. And, they were,
and it really fit the expected theory.
It fit the expected theory. The variations were small, as any serious astrologer would expect,
based
on sun sign. But it was real, and I was young and naive, and I was so excited about it. Here's scientific evidence for astrology. And I couldn't find anybody interested or anybody to publish the book. I wasn't part of the astrological community then.
Yeah.
I remember getting a letter back from a publisher that I can almost quote it exactly. The thrust of modern astrological publishing is egocentric, and I expect it to remain that way. Which was really quite accurate. You know, people wanted to read about themselves. And and so I actually started out as a statistical astrologer.
Okay, so we're not so far apart.
Not so far apart in our basic DNA. I am a Capricorn with Saturn and Virgo.
How do you like that? See, so there's a revelation.
Right.
My mythological friend here was crunching numbers at the
beginning. Absolutely. But then I learned that something I suspect you have learned painfully, which is that you can crunch all the numbers in the world and nobody really gives a damn. You know, that doesn't excite people. And I'm not saying this in a gloating way. I don't approve of it. Astrology would be better if we were willing to be more objective. but I'm glad that that book didn't get published, even though it was heartbreaking at the time, because I think I would have been pulled in that direction.
Uh-huh.
The direction my work has actually gone has been so profoundly meaningful to me. Mm-hmm.
Seemed right for you, right?
Feels right for you.
Feels right for me, yes.
And I just make one more comment I start off by saying I appreciate that you're treating me respectfully.
Mm-hmm.
There are some astrologers who take a very academic or scientific kind of viewpoint would imagine that, well, you know, he could say anything and, you know, that's fuzzy
right.
kind of astrology. And I mean, you're familiar with that attitude.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think it's completely unfair, and the challenge that I would put forth to such astrologers is... you know, you sit with clients day after day after day, like 5 days a week, and if you're saying things to them that don't pass the reality check with the client, that aren't helpful to the client, it's like electroconvulsive shock. And after 30 years of client work, there's, you know, it may be anecdotal evidence, but a self-correcting body of experience arises, and I will call that soft science.
Okay, I agree with you if, the big if, the counseling approach leads to that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have gotten readings from various astrologers, some of which I think the astrologer learned a lot,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they were listening to me to
mm-hmm.
some extent.
Mm-hmm.
They were checking their ideas, like he has a lot of
mm-hmm.
Taurus, why is he not this or whatever. So they're getting validation. I have gotten other readings from very famous and well-known and loved astrologers where my impression, just common sense, there's no big psychic insight, is that this person is basically giving a monologue and providing this information.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I deviate from what they're saying, I'll say, well, but, then they kind of wash over that in such a way that I don't feel... They could see 20,000 clients in a month.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that they would really be learning anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that this is true if
mm-hmm.
there's a proper dialogue. And you know something else? Richard Feynman, the great scientist, talked a lot about how your approach to a subject is important, even in physics.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be receptive to that information. You have to be humble, you know, if there's some arrogance involved. So with the right attitude... Absolutely. Everything you say is absolutely true. You're getting the feedback. And we could call it anecdotal. But if you've spent a considerable amount of time studying that, and sometimes there's follow-up consultations, we could call that a case study, you know, and you're zeroing in proper ways. So yes, this is all certainly valid ways of getting information.
Yeah, we're on the same page.
And also, well, Stephen, were you also making the point that if you, after so many years, sit with people and know that what you're saying has relevance for them and meaning for them,
mm-hmm.
then that's the testimony of what we do
mm-hmm.
versus what techniques we're using to get there.
Absolutely.
You know, I think that maybe we all do need different approaches, or not different approaches, but a different way or a different style of arriving at the heart of the client.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, it what's more important, I guess, is what I would say. What's
to
more
help
important?
The client.
To help the client.
Yeah, helping the
Does
client.
It mm-hmm. matter as much whether we've used Hellenistic techniques or we've used
mm-hmm.
karmic techniques or we've gotten there because we're tuned in on a psychological level to the meanings of the planet. If in the end you've given that person something that's truly meaningful,
mm-hmm.
that's
you've
what
arrived.
Counts. I agree, you have arrived. That's what counts.
That is what, yeah.
Okay, now, here comes David the scientist. I think you have this spectrum, we could call it epistemological spectrum. How do we know anything? You know, from anecdotal to case studies and so on.
Right.
And just like the body, you know, needs iron and copper and magnesium and calcium, and if it lacks vitamin C, it all goes to pieces. I think that for a healthy psychology, sociology, anthropology, astrology, any of these soft sciences, you must have your full minimum daily requirement of healthy things.
Yes.
You must have
yes.
an emphasis on controlled studies, questioning
yes, you do.
The assumptions
yes.
And this is the thing, you have some people, as Stephen said, you know, in the scientific frame of mind, who are just going to diss, as they say on the street. They're going to disrespect. Yeah. Now, I don't know any academics who think that way. These, you know, these are sort of wacko quasi-scientists, because anecdotal evidence and case, this is how we live our lives. But we need, my problem is the great majority of astrologers, from my observation, are not involved in anything remotely involving controlled studies. I'd have no problem with that. But what bothers me is I think we have a serious vitamin deficiency, and the individual, the astrology community, is dying from it. Because we need go beyond serious qualitative through the quantitative realm to check and verify. One last thing, and I'll yield the floor to somebody, is that I agree, the bottom, you know, the end thing is the benefit to the client. But of course, you know, maybe you get benefit if you just talk to them without any astrology, maybe whatever. So these kinds of controlled approaches or quantitative studies of some kind, at last point, one thing I think astrologers don't always appreciate is that nothing in astrology has yet to be validated in a quantitative sense. And then to wonder why academia would be skeptical when you have never shown any relationship, I think is naive.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. I was going to make the point that I don't think it's unusual in fields that are humanistic and like service-oriented, like the one we are in, for there to be a tension between the clinical work and the clinical side of the profession and the research side of the profession. And maybe we need to educate people, astrologers, that, okay, the tension can exist, but there has to be that tension.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have the research end working to show whether there's evidence-based conclusions for a lot of the work that we're doing. Mm-hmm. And you have to have the clinical end, in other words, the consultation end, that goes, okay, well, maybe you're right. And I didn't think of that. And I think that tension exists in the best fields. And I think we have to have maybe
we want
more
that tension.
Of that tension.
Yes, I think what
more
we have now,
yeah.
I mean, maybe because I'm the representative of that scientific side, maybe I'm over-exaggerating or paranoid about it, but it seems to me that I'm becoming an extinct breed. You know, the field seems to be dominated by practitioners, practitioners.
That's a very good point you made.
And I think, you know, we have a lopsided view. Let me give one simple example.
Yeah.
In one of the lectures at the conference here, I went through the database. You know, we have thousands of time charts. And you can see who has the most Aquarius or Capricorn on the chart. So rather than randomly selecting a client or a famous person, there's nothing wrong with that to illustrate, for illustration purposes. But if you don't even take the time to run through a database and pick out that person, you could give Sun, Moon, and Ascendant 5 points or something, and then you get seven planets in Aquarius, then you, whatever your definition of Aquarius, must fit this pure type. This is just very simple, obvious, controlled study. You know, we don't have to be talking about statistical significance or data mining or whatever. Just simple ways to control for bias. This is just ABCs. Hey, my lecture was probably one of the only one out of a great many where anybody said, I will control for bias if I think squares of Venus and Neptune mean so-and-so, and they use a client or this person. Why not run through your database? We have the software today. We have the databases included in software. Why not run through, pull all the people, and that person who had that factor, say it's Venus, Neptune, square, with the 1 minute orb, and it was in the air signs, and it was in the third house, or whatever the point is, and that, I think, controls for the bias. But I think astrologers are so confident in their intuition, and in their holiness, and in that their internal wisdom, that they're unwilling or don't feel the need for this challenge. And until we do that, A, I think we're ill, and B, I don't think we belong in academia. The ball is in our court to balance this weakness in our system. That's That's my Bible thumping for the moment.
Well, you know, Stephen, what do you think?
Because, yeah, what do you think?
I mean,
this is juicy.
Yeah, yeah. I think maybe we need more education for astrologers about the necessity.
For the necessity.
And to develop this, even if it creates tension.
Right.
Even if it's like... Mm-hmm.
And I don't want everybody to go out and do everything I'm talking about, but we need more of it and more awareness of the... What do you think?
Yeah, oh my gosh. We're going to jump in. I think there's a lot of places I would like to enter this, but... I'm going to do the one that will probably lead most quickly to the fireworks. You know?
That's what we want.
Yeah,
let's get in there.
Absolutely. Hey, you know, we want to sell tickets to the show. Right? So... I don't think that there's that much hope for astrology being invited into the academic world. I think that the basic paradigms that astrology rests on in the ultimate sense are so far outside the basic assumptions of rational Western science that a reconciliation isn't possible unless... the academic paradigms are willing to transform as much as the astrological paradigms are. So I have no interest at all in the marriage of astrology to the academic world. And in this, I don't mean to sound anti-academic, and God knows not anti-intellectual, but it's a major thrust in the modern mm-hmm. astrological culture mm-hmm. is the, to me, completely futile and ill-fated attempt to be reconciled to the academic world. I had a specific experience of this, which I found quite embittering. I was the chair of the Kepler College Advisory Council.
Yes.
Yeah.
I discovered, ironically, that they didn't really want my advice very much. You know? Kepler started out with the notion that there would be a reconciliation of academic thinking and astrology, but gradually they began to have to edit out the practical application of counseling astrology in order to become acceptable to the Board of Regents. And I just simply lost interest in Kepler as they ceased to really be actively engaged in the training of counseling astrologers on the assumption that astrology actually worked. And that seemed like the academic paradigm had leached the life out of something that was actually a very powerful and positive initiative for the astrological community, made me give up on academia.
Right. Yeah, you know, in the first part, Giselle and I were both laughing, and I have a feeling you were laughing because you saw a good fight coming on.
I have an opinion.
Because now we can really fight over this, because I completely disagree with the first thing you said. But I agree about your experience with Kepler College, and we saw how the academic requirements sucked the life out of the astrology. Mm-hmm. And I feel a lot of compassion for what you went through and the whole school went through in that process. But the first part, now we can have a good fight here. About you don't, I'm paraphrasing, correct me if I'm way off base, but something to the effect that you don't see the need for trying to, or the hope of getting a reconciliation of academia and astrology, because the basic premises of astrology are so, the paradigms and so on are so far outside the realm of the academic framework. And I realized that that happened within that context at Kepler College, and that had a lot to do with how the licensing board at this time, what they expect and what's available. But in another context, I find the fault is completely with astrology in the context of my little world. Mm-hmm. And I find the academia almost faultless. And this is my personal experience, is that I think they're right and we're wrong, and within my little world. And this is what happened to me, is about 3 years ago, I decided to go to a local university in Gainesville, Florida, great University of Florida. I'm a Gator now, right? So anyway, to take some graduate courses in statistics, A, to brush up on some things, and B, to make connections with academia. So as I do typically when I go into some foreign environment and people ask me what I do say software development, and I don't mention astrology. And then when it finally came out, I noticed nobody really cared. It didn't seem noteworthy. I said, well, here we go, now I'm going to tell them. It didn't seem, you know, it didn't seem like any big deal. But what I did notice is because you know, I was obviously an older student, that I have a lot of background in programming, statistics, the great amount of respect and appreciation, and the great interest. But as far as the paradigm, these guys are saying they're looking at particles, and when they look away, they're waves. They really had no problem with this idea of the astrology. All they were really asking me, which is the same thing I asked myself, is there a measurable effect? Is there some evidence that there's a measurable effect from this astrology, or is it all just rather subjective, or what kind of research has gone on at a soft or qualitative levels and so on? But I didn't see any paradigm problems. And furthermore, I'll go this far. I would say that on the whole, I feel better understood in academia than I do in astrology.
Yeah.
Not that I feel misunderstood in astrology, but I do find myself banging my head or feeling alienated, and I find myself constantly misunderstood. Mm-hmm. Quickly, I'm a Newtonian, I'm mechanistic, I'm this and that, you know, I'm you know, a nerd brain, you know, because I do numbers and I couldn't possibly understand the sensitivities of past, I dream about past, like I'm weird, just as weird as anybody out there. But this kind of, you know, it's almost like a form of New Age racism or some, this profiling, you know, I feel like a minority group. I go to the university where I expect to be exercised, you know, as the weirdo, and I go in and nobody cares. I mean, some of them are Buddhists, some of them are atheists, some of them are weird in all ways. Who cares? Nobody cares. All they care about, I love academia, they really don't care if you're a woman or a man or black or green or purple. I went in there, and I took the test. I did well on the test. I could help the professor with that. He would put me in on an errand, and I would help him with that. And I was played the game because I love the game. And the whole problem is we haven't shown that it works. Mm-hmm. And I've had professors tell me, they're so excited. If you find something, and they're helping me, correcting my studies, did you check this, read this paper? They're ready. One professor told me, if you find something, I'll make sure you speak at an important slot in an academic conference.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't, in my world, which is different from the Kepler College trying to get licensing from an official board, but in my world of one-on-one dealing with professors, the problem is I don't have any goods to show them. You know, it's all sort of, well, you know, anecdotal evidence.
Yeah.
And they don't have any problem with that. They're just saying if you grow up to the next level, come join the team. But they don't know what I'm doing. They don't understand it. They don't have time. They don't have interest. But if I can deliver something, I see a completely open door.
I have two things that I wanted to say. One is that I think maybe we're experiencing a lot of varied responses right now across a spectrum of people in institutions, and maybe in general on the institutional level. What I mean is the bureaucratic level, a government entity level.
Yeah.
We're going to run into this kind of fixity of mind and this kind of ostracism.
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe on the creative educational level, where it comes to teachers, professors, students, we are much less likely to run into these kinds of barriers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think we do need to make inroads, and maybe we will, maybe we won't.
Yeah.
But there's another point that I wanted to make, and that is whether we will or whether we won't, our own aspirations for astrology should not be less than any other field. And in that sense, that we have both the research end and the clinical end, and that they do a dance together that has a sense of equality, information exchange, sometimes like, I don't believe you, but this is really true. So I'm going back to our, I think that our aspiration to have that level of standard for ourselves, which is an academic level, whether we accept it or not, I don't know, academic, clinical, or just standard. I don't know what to call it.
Yeah.
I think that's what we should.
It's all of the above.
To.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, that was just beautifully stated. That was.
Yeah,
I think
absolutely.
That should be a testament right there. That I think captures the essence of it.
Yeah.
And then going back, I don't want to beat a horse to death here, but. Or sound defensive, but I think bringing in my minority group of researchers who study research methodology, and as you have, or a lot of, you know, anybody in the academic field, and incorporating that more and checking,
yeah.
you know, You know, we've instituted in astrology the ethics training.
Yes.
And the counseling training.
Yes.
And I think maybe now we're ready for a research methodology and critical thinking requirement.
You know, David, I'm thinking of ESAR's program, the new program that we really want to galvanize in research with you and Glenn and Donna.
Right.
Where maybe we can use that as a vehicle
maybe,
to get this out there.
And maybe we should add a new requirement.
A new requirement.
So that people know what the different qualitative studies are, what the quantitative methods are.
The two branches need to be working together, and maybe we can build up this branch. We kind of let it.
And you know what happens if you don't know something? Like, if you don't know any statistics or research methodology, then of course you have an image of it. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes when you get to know somebody, they're not as simple as you think. As it, I think a lot of astrologers think that all the scientists are, you know, like in a narrow number, and they don't appreciate all the qualitative levels and so on.
Yeah. Can I throw in something real quick?
Yeah, of course.
I just want to say that in my study of science, I was an astrophysics, physics major, and but then I became an astrologer, so go figure. But I think that the recent emergence of things like relativistic dynamics and quantum physics and especially this new science of emergence, in, which shows that the parts of something can add up to something greater in the whole, you know, like hydrogen and oxygen are gases, but they become water together, and then they become sort of a, you know, the emergent property is life. So in the birth chart, you have Venus over here and Mars over there and the moon over here, and those planets are important as parts, but it's the whole, the emergence of all the parts working together that creates the individual that's sitting before you. And I think that that would speak to Stephen's concern that, hey, maybe academia needs to see that, you know, the paradigm shift that's happening before it. And at the same time, I've been hanging out in Boulder, and I go to a philosophy group full of academics, and when I didn't bring up astrology for about 3 weeks, but when I did, they were all like, you know, up in arms about this topic, you know? And I challenged them. I said, okay, have you ever had your chart done? And they said, no, why would I need to? And I'm like, what kind of academic of you? Your closed-mindedness is masquerading as skepticism. And I challenged them, and I actually did a chart because they had never experienced it. And it blew their mind. They were like, my whole reality is just broken down. I have so many questions for you. They were like, I want to...
Kelly.
They said, I want to see you do you just so I can understand this. And I think that if any of these academics had a reading with Stephen, they would be like, oh my God, I have to investigate this. The power of the consultation would, you know, convert the disbelievers in any I would bet every, the farm on it. So that's just my two cents.
Well, actually, I think you made two points there. One is a theoretical framework, as we like to say in academia, that there are theoretical frameworks for astrology. I mean, you know, Einstein discovered relativity over 100 years ago, so this didn't happen yesterday, that the, you know, the reality is not what it appears to be. So that's not so difficult. And the second point is exposing scientists, academics, professionals, if they get exposed to astrology through consultation or what other mechanisms, it's, again, it's different from what you think something is when it's far away from you, which is what I was saying about what statistics methodology is to some astrologers. They think it's a smaller thing than it is.
Right, yeah. Right.
It makes a difference.
I've got a question for you, David.
Yeah.
I have the assumption that you've experienced personally the meaningfulness of astrological symbolism in your own life. You've been drawn to astrology, that it's been meaningful psychologically and spiritually to you,
yes,
as it has been to everybody at this conference.
Absolutely.
So based on that that observation, that you see it works at some level of the meaning of the word, it works. It has worked for you, as it has worked for all of us.
Yes.
And then the elephant in the living room, I suppose, is so why do you think you've not been able to find evidence for that at a statistical level? There's
that,
a disconnect.
Yeah, you have just described the entire life of David Cochran. I am basically, that is my life, 95% of my life, is that I'm completely obsessed, and I think obsessed is actually not even too strong a word, it's not even an exaggeration, with trying to understand, I use the term measurable effect, can we find a measurable effect? And
in the form of astrology I do, as it has evolved over the decades, I believe that I'm looking at these aspect lines, measuring their orbs, you know, in this very specific procedure. I look at it, and then I just do the reading.
Yeah.
You know, of course I use sensitivity as, you know, and all those things as well. But I've been asked by TV interviewers, for example, to do this circus show, just read me.
Yeah.
And I do it.
Yeah. And you do it well.
I do it well. Did you watch that video?
Yes.
There's video on my website.
Yeah.
And it stuns me. I told this guy he might kill himself surfing. He almost killed himself surfing. I told him he should be a professor in literature. He's a professor in literature. I'm looking at the stuff and I'm going, I can't believe that little red line, because it was half a degree orb instead of 2 degrees. I question, because of that scientific thing I was born with. So why, this is my question, why can't I prove it if I think I'm seeing it?
Yes.
And this has driven me to go back to the university, take statistics classes. Now I've learned data mining and all this other stuff. I think there's a lot of reasons, and I think for me to answer that completely would get rather academic and pedantic, but just a few things is one, and this makes me very unfriendly in the astrological community sometimes, is that I think a lot of our rules, in fact, I suspect, I'm only guessing, because we don't know. Until you find the answer, you don't know. But my guess at this point is I think that most of the rules of astrology are actually incorrect. Mm-hmm. I just think they're not true. Mm-hmm. So someone will say the sixth house is health, or it's small animals, or whatever it might be, or the eighth house is sex, or it's death, or it's whatever. I personally think that most of the rules are just wrong. And the only reason they work is because they're flexible enough, because you can take the ruler of the house and so on, and the sensitivity of the astrologer is good enough that they make sense. The archetypal images in astrology are so deep, they're so far beyond where Jung or even Joseph Campbell went. They're so eternal. They speak to everyone's heart and soul. Like, where else could you find the schoolmarm who, you know, is very fastidious and wraps the knuckles other than in Virgo, a certain
yes.
man? We have all of those
yes.
images, and they're
yes.
so vibrant, so clear.
Yes.
So the archetype is true. The wisdom is deeper than any other form of psychology in many ways. But the actual rule, I think most of the rules are wrong, and the rules that are right are so small that they're not getting enough signal-to-noise ratio, as we like to say in data mm-hmm. mining.
Yeah.
So the effect size isn't large enough.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think I'm on track now to a set of rules that is accurate enough, with enough data, that I think that we are on track, myself and some buddies in this thing, that I think I'm hopeful that this time around, in this lifetime, we'll finally do it. We'll finally get that measurable effect. That's the dream. That's the vision. I may go to the grave again without it, but I'm going to go down fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's so exciting. Can I ask you also, now that you're here, because this is so my minimal knowledge about science, but is there any evidence that using probability as a way of measuring effects would be a better way than using causality, you know, X, you know, A,
mm-hmm.
A plus B equals C? Do I know what is involved? And I don't know. It's just like what I've read about and how
right.
accurate probability
right.
is.
That's a very good question. And the answer is we in the social sciences don't generally care at this point about causality. Causality, I can't think of the guy's name. Anyway, there's a new developments in methodology. But the issue is always probability.
It is always probability.
Yeah,
okay.
Right. We don't really care about what's causing anything. You're only developing those models to help find new discoveries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, astrology is never, science is never about truth. It's just about creating models that work.
Mm-hmm.
So the theory is relatively unimportant except as a tool to help find another thing.
Yeah.
So it's a little game you play. You develop this theory to help find something else. But it's not that you care what the cause is. It just works.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always probability. One more thing about probability, and this is one reason astrologers really have a problem, we astrologers, because I am one of them, is that you only have to find an extremely subtle effect. Very, very subtle. It's not like, you know, Geminis all have to talk a lot. If they just talk a tiny bit more
consistently
than the Cancer or the Scorpio. Like if you counted the number of words the people with a Gemini stellium said in an hour versus the Scorpio. If the Scorpio said 90 words and the Gemini stellium said 93 words and you have 100, you'd need a larger sample size.
Yeah.
That's science. It doesn't have to be useful.
Mm-hmm.
The effect size can be so small, it doesn't have to be practically useful. That blows open the whole door.
Yeah.
And I have professors telling me that, David, if you find even a small, small effect, and if it will stand up under our scrutiny, you have just blown the lid off everything, and we will feature you, whoever finds it.
Mm-hmm.
So this business about, you know, the paradigm not being accepted, that's true at the licensing level, because those aren't the teachers for us. You made that point beautifully. But at the personal one-on-one level, over 90% of the professors and graduate students that I've encountered, they just want to know, did you find that little, tiny, small effect? Because once that's done, then clearly something's going on and we start an entire new discipline.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the key that I see.
You know, as you're talking, I feel myself getting really interested in research. I'm like, I want to go, okay, now tell me, could we do this? Could we do that? And so I'm really, sitting here right now as president of ESAR, I am getting really excited about developing this end of things as part of our program.
Well, it's the spectrum, right? We want the spectrum from the anecdotal evidence to the case study.
Right.
To the more harder things, and just let every, you know, here's the irony. In astrology, we learn everybody should be themselves.
Yeah.
You know, the Cancer should be touchy and hug and cry at the movies and you know, let the Capricorn run his business. We learn this diversity is inherent in nature.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And some people are made to crunch numbers,
yes.
and it is relevant to astrology.
Mm-hmm.
And some people are made to be psychic, intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have Sun, Uranus, Neptune, they don't need to know a bunch of numbers. So, you know, I think we need the richness of reality that astrology is so vast, it incorporates all this.
Yeah. I like what you've said about questioning the fundamentals in terms of the, you know, the six houses, pets, and so on. This will sound self-serving, but the first line of the first chapter of my first book, people change, but one assumption runs like a virus through the literature of astrology. People do not change.
Mm.
That there is such a tendency in conventional astrologies to assume that there will be some kind of one-to-one correspondence between an astrological configuration and a trait within the personality. The kind of astrology I practice, without getting too technical about it, evolutionary astrology, simply assumes that people are capable of self-transformation and that each symbol in astrology represents a spectrum of possibilities from the lowest and most self-destructive to the highest and most spiritual. I can't think of a better word than that. And so that nothing has a rigid or fixed meaning, and my thought, statistics are, you know, outside my realm of expertise, but I've often felt that we're in the position trying to prove astrology of we have this creature and it's a hairy worm, and we take a sample of its DNA, and then some months later we have another creature and it's this beautiful moth with colored wings and we take a sample of its DNA. Oh my God, there must be some mistake. You know, it's the same DNA.
That's what I was talking about when I talked about probability.
Yes.
I have a feeling going in that direction. So that, and again, the comment David made earlier, that the problem is with astrology. You know, I love that. I say that a lot myself. And in fact, I critiquing the astrological community and the astrologers complaining that they can't make a living at it, don't have enough clients, you know, a common kind of thing. I blame us, and you know, I feel that the pool of clients has gotten ahead of the astrological paradigm. So many astrologers are still putting people in little boxes, and it's not just bad philosophy, it just doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
It's a wrong assumption. People are much more fluid than that.
And so you're not doing what Giselle has pointed out is the end game. You're not helping that client
absolutely
forcing them into the box when none of these astrological factors are in a box. And I'm completely with
the
philosophy of evolutionary astrology as you present it, that the people are evolving and changing, and if they're not, we're in big trouble.
Absolutely. But there's so much evidence that we are. I sit with a client for the first time, and the client is born in 1975, I'll say, let us consider the phenomenon of your personality in the year 1980, you know, when of course you had one, but it was that of a five-year-old, and you have improved, you know, your chart has not improved, you know, end of story as far as that one-to-one correspondence stuff goes. It just doesn't work, you know, people demonstrably change. It's not a philosophical statement.
It's
science.
And it comes back to this question, if astrology works, why haven't we proved it so far? And one of the answers you gave was a brilliant answer to it, because of the complexity of the language, the way in which people can express these things at different levels, the complexity, the interaction of astrological factors, the evolution of the person, the interaction of that astrology chart with their environment and their experiences and the meaning they derive from it. It's such a complex network of factors. And, you know, many astrologers would quickly therefore conclude that this is too complex, too lifelike, it's too personal, there's too much individual will and meaning and heritage to ever come in with your little number-crunching, Newtonian, mechanistic stuff and somehow extract out of that. But what that misses, that point of view, is that the statistical analysis of any kind is only about probability. It says nothing about cause, and it doesn't need to understand those complexities. And the demands of that analysis are so extremely small that there only has to be a very slight effect. And on top of that, the statistical tools, you know, they boomed in the early 1900s when statistics was basically invented. You know, it's a relatively new area of mathematics. And in the last 20 years, statistical analysis has gone through a revolution. It has gone wild. It just transformed dramatically. And so when astrologers often think of statistics, they're thinking of statistics shortly after it was born, you know, like in 1940 and so on. But there's a whole new dimension which is flexible, which doesn't have a lot. It's called data mining. And Google and Facebook and everybody else is making billions of dollars extracting information from data. And we're living back in the dark ages before these brilliant discoveries. You have all of these geniuses coming up with all of these mathematical breakthroughs and saying we can get information without control groups. Just give me enough information and we'll find subtle effects. We'll know that because you bought this book and you're a such and such male at such and such an age, there's a 30% probability you will buy this book 4 months from now. We can extract this information. So what I'm doing is I'm taking these new, exciting, flexible tools, trying to extract out a very, very subtle effect. Science is in our side, philosophically and technically. And the computer breakthrough, the statistics software I use, is free. And I combine that with my astrology. There's a whole new world for us to detect this incredible network and maze of complex. It's difficult. It's extremely difficult. That's why I'm bald. I'm pulling my hair out trying to get this right. But is it doable? I am certain it is if there's any kind of effect.
I'm certain it is too, but I'm also completely amazed that you haven't succeeded yet. You know, that the thing you're looking for statistically is so subtle it keeps escaping. And yet what we observe in the counseling room is, is not subtle.
It amazes me too.
It's confusing.
I am confused. I thought I would have, I or Alfie or any one of my other buddies, I thought one of us would have nailed by now. Of course, we don't have a lot of time. You've got to take the kids to the soccer game. You've got to see your clients.
Where's our $10 million grant?
Yeah, we don't have that. Yeah. So, you know, we're just poking around in our spare time. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of reasons why I don't think we've done it, and the field is evolving so much. But still, astrology is not what I thought it was in the 70s. I mm-hmm. thought we would be home free by now. Mm-hmm. So it is, something is going on. So I'm learning every day. I don't have all the answers, you know. Well, some astrologers seem to, you know. I ask them this question. Well, this is the reason why, David, because I'm glad you know everything. Because I don't. I'm like Stephen. I am confused. But in that confusion, I think I'm getting smarter a little by little.
Zen mind, beginner's mind. You know, God protect us all from ever becoming experts.
Oh, yes.
Well, I haven't made it. Wrestling through this, and it may be anybody could be right.
Yeah.
The skeptics may be right. The intuitive astrologers may be right, because until
everybody's right,
maybe we're all right in different ways. Until we cross the finishing line and it's been sorted out, and that may be in with the next 100. We don't know. To me, that's the journey. That's the fun.
Oh, absolutely.
You know.
Yeah.
And so,
it's such a diverse world, astrology. I mean, just thinking of what has motivated, well, the three of us, mm-hmm. you know, probably Giselle and I are a little closer in terms of, mm-hmm. of, you know, being motivated to do the eye-to-eye, nose-to-nose
yes.
kind of work with clients.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I come from a metaphysical place. Giselle comes from a psychological place. You obviously speak both languages.
Yeah, I come from both.
Devoted yourself to the numbers. And, mm-hmm. and I, you know, it's this, I in my own head, I never think of astrology. I think of astrologies.
Yes,
you know, it's
absolutely.
Plural.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. And and amidst those astrologies, I think what we're trying to do here is explore a few of them, mm-hmm. see how different they are and where they sit. And I think one of the conclusions we're having, this is almost too chummy and sweet of a conclusion for me. And, you know, but, you know, the truth is, where we get to.
Yeah.
But I think we're deciding that, you know, this diversity is good, and we need to strengthen things.
Yeah.
And our presiers got inspired with some new ideas.
Yeah, my wheels are turning. But, you know, I think that the idea of there being even a line between a psychological astrologer and a metaphysical astrologer is, for me, a little blurry.
Oh,
because
yeah.
it's really hard to not feel that there are all kinds of energies that are beyond. I mean, whether I'm doing my
yeah.
work
wow.
as a psychotherapist, I mean, whether I'm doing my work as an astrologer, I mean, you just know that
yeah.
you're being led by some other forces.
Wow.
Oh, you can feel it. And the more you do it, you can really feel it.
Yeah.
Yes.
I've come to a point, you know, and I'm departing a little, but you know that I integrate astrology with psychotherapy.
Yes, yes.
That I do have to do my work, but what constitutes my work
yeah.
and what I think my work is has changed so much.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because I already know that there's a path that we're going to walk down together.
Yeah.
And I don't need to know what that path is. I just know that we're going there.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And that is not purely psychological in
no.
the sense that
no.
is in a textbook. Or
yeah.
It's just some greater sense
yeah.
of something happening.
Yes.
So I know it's not identical with the metaphysical, maybe, you know, you have a lot of other places
yeah.
that you're
yeah.
connecting
yeah.
to, but, you know, there are people that come into my practice, we just know they're coming in, bringing in issues from another lifetime.
Yeah.
It is just something that, okay, let me retract that. Do I know? What do I mean by know? I feel, so perhaps it's disputable,
yeah. Yeah.
but you know,
yeah,
when you sit with people for 30 yeah. years,
yes, yes,
you can tell the difference between people.
I've
and
had
the
a
kinds of
funny experience of that, because the kind of astrology I do is we assume reincarnation is the simple way to say it, referencing what Giselle just said. But I always make a speech with a client that, you know, there are lots of ways to interpret the idea of past lives, and I would like to use the language of reincarnation, if that's okay with you. You can think of this as your deoxyribonucleic acid, your ancestors living on inside you. We can think of it as how God made you. You know, there's some past. You see it in a baby's eyes, you know, in
right.
a story. And, But then the funny point of this is, so I always make this speech to clients and invite them to ask me not to use reincarnational language. I've had two experiences and, you know, countless thousands of readings. I work like a maniac, and I've been doing this for a long time. Two experiences of people saying, please don't use reincarnational language. One was a psychotherapist in Marin County who didn't want to have any past lives. The other was a professor at Catholic University who had a theological axe to grind about past lives. But yeah, the funny part of the story is he came back to me for a second reading about 10 years later and said, okay, tell me about my past lives. So I'm down to one person over, I've probably done 30,000 readings or some number like that. I don't count.
Yeah.
One who didn't have any openness to reincarnation. Yeah. People are open to it. They like the idea.
They like the idea. And I think it's because of what Giselle said, is that in that consultation experience, you know, I think I have a solution to the entire drug problem.
Okay.
In the United States or any country. We get them all involved in astrology. Because you in that experience, you start off interpreting these symbols and, oh, you know, Leo is this and this and that. And then you start relating it to people. And all of a sudden, it doesn't happen with every consultation. You know, a lot of consultations will just be, I gave them the information, it was meaningful. But every once in a while, when you start, and I don't care who it is, this has nothing to do with being psychic or whatever, it's just instinct, like you smell, and this is really, you start doing that, and the communication starts getting so deep.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, I feel, and I know you both feel this, we know the soul of that person.
Something is guiding us.
And like, you can see, yeah, like I'm looking at the client and they're saying, oh, I had this argument at work.
Yeah.
And you start to see, oh, that square aspect. And the node was there. And you can feel, and then you already know that they're going to say something about their sister or something. And then they say it.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh my God, you know that you put your hands on some kind of wire with a lot of voltage,
yeah,
that's way bigger than we are. And so, you know, I'm Mr. Scientist David. Well, I don't care what kind of a nerd,
right,
number maniac you are. You put your hands anywhere near that wire, you're going to get jolted, baby. Honey, you're going to... You're going to feel this, honey. It's going to rock you.
This is the kind of thing I meant. You actually objected to a little while ago. Maybe we can make it clearer here. When I said that what we do and the fundamental assumptions of the academic world are incompatible, that this kind of phenomenon, people, this is so strange. People would have readings with me. They liked the reading, but they didn't want the stigma of believing in astrology.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a client phenomenon that'll happen.
Yeah, it happens.
And so, you know, at the end of the reading, they need to own it emotionally, but to keep astrology away, they look at me sort of conspiratorially and say, you're pretty psychic, aren't you?
Yeah.
It took me a moment to realize that's a trap. You
that's
know?
Right.
Yeah. If I say yes, it's like, okay, I'm dismissed
if
astrology,
exactly,
right,
you know,
right,
which, you know, I'm not going to do. And yet, you know, I began to have experiences like we're talking about here. One time, in a reading, I had to like make up somebody's social security number in an anecdotal story. I was trying to illustrate some just random number.
Mm-hmm.
I made up the first few digits of it, and they said, "How did you know my social security number?"
Oh my God!
And I do not experience myself as psychic.
No, none of us do.
Both of us know what you're saying, and the people who watch this may say he is psychic, but
if you play golf, you know what golf is.
Exactly.
If you do astrology, you know it's not psychic as people define it.
Yeah.
It's
you
through that chart.
Something weird happens, though. And
yeah,
that something weird that happens is the soul and the essence of my life, and it is totally incompatible with anything I've learned in the university, and that's why I have no particular desire to build that bridge, because when I see astrologers pandering to the academic community pitifully to get the approval of the academic community, they rip out the heart and the soul of everything that's meaningful to me.
Let me respond to that, because I think this is a David Steven boom 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 here.
Yeah.
And we've got
you know, motto here to...
if we start to kill each
other. Yeah, put the boys in their place here with her way she speaks with such wisdom. But let the boys fight a little bit here.
Sure.
You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah. But let me say this. Let me go back to my vitamin deficiency thing.
Yeah.
Is that I agree with you. Not everything that astrology does is part of academia. Amen, brother. I agree with you.
Okay. We're not really that far apart.
No, we're not. And you know, and I agree that it's easy to pander to other things and to lose your connection to what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, and we can all be prone to that. That's true. There's a part of astrology that's not part of academia. There's probably a part of psychology that's not part of academia. Mm-hmm. When you take what you learned in school and you go out in the field and you live it.
So somebody
who goes to Berklee School of Music and does all this great stuff, but when he or she gets on stage, you know, there's the connection, the involvement, same thing with sports. You know, you live that life, and that life of playing tennis or playing trombone or whatever, it's music or sports or astrology, that's life. All these tools come in. So I'm not so sure we're that different from everybody else in that regard. Mm-hmm. Although some of the experiences you have, like reading social screen, it is a little different than anything I've done in tennis anyway. But still...
You told a very similar story a while back, though, about knowing the surfing accident.
Yes.
That's every bit as amazing.
Yes.
It's the same thing.
Yes, it is. So where was I going with this? I can't remember, but...
Trying your damnedest to disagree with me. But
yeah, I'm trying to fight with you, but I mean, we didn't really get into a good battle. I'll come back to it later.
Well, I think one of the points that you're saying is that there's a difference between what you study and then the applied version of it ends up being something a little bit different. I don't know if that's the only point you were making.
No, and now I remembered what I was going to say, which is, you know, as we apply these things, you know, that world exists, but I still insist on this vitamin deficiency problem.
Yeah,
that's the thing I
want
to go back to. So we need, you know, that to check things.
Mm-hmm.
So we live the life,
mm-hmm.
which is not part of what you would do in the training, in academia, or wherever. But at the same time, there are rules and foundations. You know, I think the sports and music analogy is very good. Because you can, suppose you play golf. Now, I'm not a great golfer, but I assume this applies in any sport. You know, the teacher may say, keep that arm straight, keep your head down, swing through. But then there's a certain point where it's like there's an archetypal swing, and you had to train your body away from all of the things that weren't that archetypal swing. So you're not naturally doing, you're bending your elbow, you're looking at the ball, your head is up, you're doing everything wrong, because you don't naturally know the archetype. And then after you learn it, and Tiger Woods does it, it's music. I mean, it's elegant, because somehow that archetypal form, and then he lives it, and then it's a breathing part of him. So, you know, all this academic and the scientific part, just to build those foundations so you know how to get that club right, and how long it should be, and which one to pick out. But always, the experience is something alive and vibrant, and takes you to places that will never be in that classroom.
Yeah. Amen.
So I think what happens is we often think that was the, we need to relate that. You don't have to. No, that's, you're in the zone, right? As we say, you're in the zone when you're doing that, and that's what happens when you, and it's because you've mastered the elements of your language. You can't get in that zone until you've gone through all that awkward stuff.
It's not all intuition.
No, and then you're in that flow of that, of what that is.
Yeah, it's like the Zen of astrology, but... First, you got to learn the rules and everything, and then once you do it enough, you go into another zone. I think that's how skill works in general with artists and great performers and people who excel in some extraordinary way. They've learned to, you know, play the chords, and they may practice 8 hours a day, but you know, something else takes over.
Right, and where the science comes in very strongly to me is that the in most sports, the athletes today are better than the ones that were 30 years ago. You know, they've gotten faster, bigger, stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that is because they learned the techniques.
Mm-hmm.
They start lifting the weights and doing this.
Mm-hmm.
They're bigger, they're whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They've learned, you know,
mm-hmm.
that you can do this or you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
the metals that are used to make the clubs may be different. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, without that science behind it, it sets a limit to where you can go.
David, are you saying to Stephen that what his objection is to academia may in fact be about something that isn't really taught in academia anyway,
right?
That what we would be using academia for is to learn the foundations, learn the principles, learn whatever anybody else learns, whether they go to an academy for music or art or study any kind of technique, but that what is incompatible with academia is incompatible with that something that is true for
all disciplines. Yes.
That reach the height of their expression.
Yes, I think that's a very, very, very good way of stating it. And I think in some academic trainings they may bring you, you know, to the lake, you know, and give you a little sip, because you may have to do a recital if you're in a school of music or consultations. But you're being watched and everything else, so I think you have a limited ability. But when that bird is set free and has mastered the material, then those unique things, you know, every gift, every person, like, you know, Michael Jordan may sail through the air like an airplane or something. Another guy may shoot from 50 feet out and get in. You know, all those unique things from all your training come out, and you enter that zone, and that magic happens, no matter what field it is.
I wonder, Stephen, whether you feel also the way you feel, because, you know, in a way, we're bringing skills into our work as astrologers that actually are connected to some form of academic study. I mean, your research, your math, your computer programming, my psychological propensity, but maybe the work that you do is so it's very spiritual, it's very in touch with forces that are not, there's no template for it, there's no real line of connection. And so maybe it does make you feel that there's even more of an incompatibility and hopelessness about ever making that connection.
I think that's really accurate.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't wake up in the morning worrying.
No, you don't. No, clearly you don't.
It's sort of not my world, and I'm happy that that world exists, and I hope all its inhabitants are happy too.
You don't need that world.
No.
You don't need it.
Related road, but I want to take this down a different vector.
Yeah.
I'm going to have the numbers wrong here, but they'll be pretty close to true. I'm quoting this off the top of my head. USA Today did a study, or survey, 1970s, do you believe in astrology or not? And it was like, I think the number was like 17% of the population said, yes, I believe in astrology. They did it again in, I think, 2001, give or take a year or two. And it was up to something like 34% or 36% who said they believed in astrology. And, I mean, who knows? You know, lies, damn lies, and statistics. But subjectively, it feels real to me that there has been, over the last two generations, an increasing acceptance of astrology by the general population, which leads me to think we're doing something right. Mm. There hasn't been academic success in terms of proving astrology. It's a noble goal, and I support it, but so far, you know,
agreed.
That's not it. That's not what caused this.
Right.
I pat the frontline counseling astrologers on the back here. You know, I think that the world is full of really effective astrologers who are doing readings for people or consultations that are meaningful. They tell their friends, and the friends come, and I think we're seeing an extraordinary 100th monkey kind of thing happening culturally.
Wow.
Let me take this further, though. That, again, my hesitations about the academic world will come through here. As an outsider relative to it, I think of the academic world as cautious and conservative.
Yes.
And it has a culture, and the culture is cautious and conservative. That something is happening in the broader culture that is leading to an acceptance of astrology, and that once the broader culture has integrated astrology, the academics will follow, the $10 million grants will follow to study it. One more statement. A paradigm, already existing historical paradigm, that I think will be somewhat predictive of the future of astrology is the fact that people in the Western world became significantly disenchanted with molecular biochemical medicine, the sort of reductional view of medicine, and began to develop a great interest in alternative kinds of medical interventions, health interventions, and the academic world followed in the form of integrative medicine, Andrew Weil's work, the Duke Integrative Medicine Program, and you know, various others that have proliferated around the country. So I think that we will lead culturally by changing the attitude of the public toward astrology, and that will create a change in the academic culture. And in fact, I think probably what David reports about the receptivity of people in the academic world reflects this phenomenon already occurring.
As astrologers, we know that the Jupiter-Saturn conjunction in Aquarius in 2020 is bringing another sort of renaissance period. And so academia itself is going to go through an evolution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But one difference between astrology and alternative medicine, alternative medicine, I think, so far has been more successful than astrology and seeping into academia and so on.
Yes.
Is that cautious and conservative nature of academia is that alternative medicine has lots of studies, controlled studies and observations. You know, it's known through hundreds of studies that garlic lowers your blood pressure. You know, these are simply facts, and you can either, I shouldn't say they're facts, I'm not an expert, but let's assume, I know there are excellent studies done in many of these areas, and we don't have that. And if we don't have any kind of controlled study that's all that impressive, I know, because I think some of the most impressive ones are ones I did, but, you know, and they're not earth-shaking. So the McLaughlin research is not as impressive as people say it is, and when I've reanalyzed it. So that conservative nature, especially if something is relating to some kind of causal model, I mean, it would be different if this was art or music, where it doesn't necessarily imply a causal model of some kind. I think that that's still a very limiting factor. So no matter how popular astrology becomes, we don't have what the acupuncturists and the chiropractors and the, especially the herbalists have, and the meditation and the relaxation, where they're measuring the change in brainwaves. They're getting results that are measurable.
Yeah,
we're not yet. And I think that that's going to keep us out.
Yeah. Yeah, I bow to that. That's I think what you're doing is wonderful. You know, we're having a hell of a time generating an argument here because
I want to fight with you. What are the two boys supposed to do? This is no fun.
Wait a second, we're different. We should be.
There's got to be something that I don't like about you.
Got to be. The male ego. I mean,
this is not good for the male ego.
A good model
Steven.
Of the male ego. We fought.
She was supposed to calm us down.
It is compatible.
Yeah. You know, on the increasing popularity of astrology that you knew that, I found that very interesting. I don't keep pace with what goes on in the world all that well, the astrological world or, you know, the world at large as much as I probably should. And that's new information to me and hopeful information for the viability of astrology in our world today. From the limited things I've noticed, I've seen some contraindications of that. For example, when I went to conferences back in the 70s, a conference would have 3,000 or 4,000 people in the 70s. We'd go to AFA conferences, and they were huge.
Wow.
I had a discussion with Zip Dobbins a few years before she had passed away. You know, we were in the lobby after a conference, sitting down, and just started reminiscing. And of course, Zip could reminisce further back than I could, because I started speaking and attending conferences around 1974. Zip went all the way back to, I think, the mid-60s or earlier. And I said, our conferences, this was, I don't know what year it was, but anyway, much later, and I said, "Are conferences smaller now?" And she started giving me numbers. I said, 3,000 people were at that conference.
Wow. Yeah.
So, you know, we could verify that. And I've actually Googled around to see if Zip was right. Mm-hmm. I guess I could go to AFA and the other organizations, Henry Weingarten. We used to have some big conferences, and verify that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm giving correct information here.
I suspect you are.
I suspect I am, and it would be good to verify. And if that's true, why would that be?
Well, it's apples and oranges, though.
Right.
You know, public.
The public versus a serious professional.
Yeah.
And it could be people who are online, internet, expecting.
Yeah.
That could be a sociological phenomenon, what venues they go to.
Yeah.
That probably has more to do with it. But that's interesting. Thank you for sharing that. That's interesting.
Which emphasizes the importance of educating the public about astrology and opening up more of the public view and possibility.
You seem to be doing a good job of that.
I think so. And you do think, Stephen, that it is the consulting astrologer that has...
That's a guess, but I think so. I can't imagine what else it would be. The internet is maybe, you know...
Yeah.
Those who have, you know, popularized a somewhat deeper kind of astrology on the internet.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Now maybe we can fight. I got a thought. What if... I'm itching for a fight. No, I'm not. I'm just sure. What if my belief, and it's only a belief, only a guess, that a lot of our actual rules are flat out wrong?
Yeah.
6,000 has nothing to do with small. I just pick on that. Some funny ancient rules. The 12th house is not large animals or something. Then is it really so great and wonderful that astrology is growing? See, I'm very concerned about... I'm like Mr. Quality Assurance Agent here.
Yes, you should be concerned.
I really think... let me take this a step further. This is a lecture I gave to astronomers on my website also. Is that... According to the historians,
yes.
You know, Robert Schmidt and Rob Hand and all the astrological historians, as well as David Pingree and other academics who are not astrologers, astrology is really, as we know it, was invented or discovered around 400 to 300 BC, you know, where all these Babylonian folk tales or oracles were systematized into these complex things, and they made up the fire, earth, air, water, and all these rules. Were put together in a relatively short amount of time. Well, what was going on when we did that around 350 BC, if those historians are correct?
Mm-hmm.
That was the time of Euclid, where Euclid created he assembled his great book, that some historians say the second most popular book in history after the Bible, is his book on the elements. So at that time, there wasn't a lot of empirical research and get control groups and this. People were into mathematics, and they thought they were entering this divine mind, and they created this pure geometry. So they took all these folk tales and, you know, all these ideas, and they systematized it into these elegant patterns. And the assumption was, if you had these elegant systems, then they must be true, because truth is beautiful. And this is right after Pythagoras and Plato with his... You know, there's a pure horse that all horses are variations of. So everything's like in the mind of God.
Yeah.
And they created this elegant, pure system. But all truth is beautiful, but not all beautiful things are true. So we've created all these beautiful paradigms. And I happen to think that most of the paradigms, they're beautiful. It's great that there's fire, there's water, and all this stuff. I just don't think they're actually relate to what we think they relate to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And on a practical level, I have reinterpreted the meanings of the 12 signs.
Mm-hmm.
They have some relationship too. I do think there is some validity of signs, mm-hmm. I'm still skeptical of it, of the houses. I've reinterpreted the meanings of the planets. And maybe even those reinterpretations are not even right. So anyway, I have a lot of, even though we can sit down with a client and have all these experiences, I'm still skeptical of what the mechanism through which that happens is.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, is a big problem. And you know, I'm a thorn in the side of astrologers, because I'm in the astrology camp, but I speak a whole lot like somebody who doesn't have any involvement in astrology, because that's where I sit, and that's why the obsession. The obsession is, I do think there are a set of rules that work, and if they do work, I should be able to find it, and I'm confused and whatever, as you are, trying to find it. But anyway, I'm always not rah-rah, shish-kumba, astrology got big, because I have some doubts that astrology has as much to offer as herbalism. in its current form. Ultimately, I love eat, sleep, and breathe, but in its state, I don't know.
You're very compartmentalized. You're yes. Part of you, obviously, you're a fine astrologer, and you sit down with somebody, and you make a difference in their life, and it touches your heart, and that's a reality. And then there's the statistician that can't prove this. And
I'm compartmentalized.
And it's fun watching the
ping pong ball going back and forth. Right.
I can contradict myself.
That's
which is a great virtue.
I put on one hat, and within that context, you know, I truly believe and agree. And then I use another theoretical framework. I'm like sort of
Gemini moon.
Yeah. And I put on a different theoretical. And while I'm in that framework, and the other thing is I truly am a scientist in that I don't know about ultimate truth. And then on top of all that, I am a mystic. I go into other states of consciousness in meditation. I don't like to talk a lot about that. It's sort of embarrassing.
I saw a bumper sticker once that says, I don't believe in astrology because I'm a Gemini.
That's really zen, isn't it? Yes. Think about that one for a while.
I guess there is a part of me that feels that if the ultimate goal, and I guess I feel my ultimate goal is to help the client,
yeah,
that no matter what I bring to the table, it's all okay.
Yeah, yes.
Because you help the client.
And if, in fact, some of it was my astrological knowledge, some of it was my listening skills, and some of it had to do with something else that we don't even know how to explain yet.
Yeah, yes.
That the goal is, for me, is, did I touch that person? But maybe not even did I touch that person. Did that person walk away with something?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, I don't know. I'm not knowing if it's right, wrong, mm-hmm, that I feel this way. Mm-hmm. But yeah. I really, for myself, feel that my purpose is to be of help.
And one quick question. If you didn't have the astrology,
could I do it?
If you had all your other psychological tools, without the astrology,
could I do it now?
You wouldn't be able to help the client as much.
Yeah.
Wow. Did you get chills?
Yeah. Absolutely. It's like putting on your glasses.
Right.
That's really a powerful statement.
Yes.
You know, as a marriage and family professional therapist and so on, and you're we can see, you know, the heart that she has to try to help, and that she can. With that tool, it does make the difference.
Yes, and that it doesn't matter that I may use the tool in many different ways, depending on the client and the situation. Obviously, if it's an astrology client, I'll be using it in more of a consistent way, but even then, it can depend on the client. But I guess what I'm saying is whether accurate astrology played a 30% role or a 90% role or a 50% role, it's the person, what they need, and how I need to be in service to that person that is the ultimate.
You know, and the one thing that we can share is after you do that consultation, see, now I've got the other hat on, but when you do that consultation and you have hit to that person where they're saying, you know, I've been fighting with my husband, da 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 da, and then you say, well, what about this, what about that, and then you get them to where they see it and they break through and they change and they develop. The effects. I've finished consultations, and you know that goodness comes through.
Right.
You know,
right.
That's the thing about drugs. This is better than any drug. You just feel so. Uh-huh. I mean, that feeling is to die for, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh man, you just know that your life has meaning. Mm-hmm. You've done good, and you know, I've read this in one of your books too. That I think you've spoken about it as well. Is that client experience that you have, there's something so magical, so sacred, and you feel so blissed out, whatever you want to say, afterwards. Because while you're doing it, I find myself, I'm just engaged. But as soon as the client, take me home. Because you've done good in the world.
Yes.
You know, it's just fantastic. And that's a fact. But, mm-hmm, you know, then I put on my other hat, and I'm wondering, how did that happen? What is this?
You're trying to write the two sides.
And just as you said, you couldn't do it without the astrology. I am absolutely convinced
that I am, because my rules are extremely rigid. They're not as flexible as most astrology, but they're very, there just isn't a lot, there's tolerance and people evolve, but, and I swear that I am following those rules, and I'll often say things I don't feel in the person. I often say, well, you get some old ball talking loud, you know, and now you don't. And you think, hey, I ain't got too bright, he must have been living in those hills too long, he ain't seen a light of day in 3 years. And then you look at his chart, and he got that dang Mercury Saturn Jupiter, must be a smart boy. So, you know, I get these guys that don't seem all that bright to me, or whatever it is, you know, or, you know, they don't look that sexy and whatever, and they got that Venus, Mars, Uranus. Mm-hmm. So I go with what the chart says. You know, this is clearly not psychic or intuitive because I'm contradicting my sense of the person. And I say, well, you know, you're so smart, you should follow. I'm saying this to this old boy who's talking like this to me. And, you know, I'm profiling, which I shouldn't do, but I just figure anybody talks like that can't, couldn't have been to, you know, Harvard or something. I mean, they'd slap him around. But, and sure enough, oh, yeah, you know, I'm a you know, on the research team in the chemistry lab of whatever. And again, and by golly, again, the astrology was smarter than me.
Oh, I love that. Astrology is smarter than me.
Beautiful.
Steal it, have at it, sis. You know, it's all
well,
yours.
It's I don't know that I have anything more to say, but it's just an awareness that I have that that it knows more than I do.
I tell my students all the time. Trust the symbols.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's essentially
the same.
Trust. Yes.
That's another beautiful that word trust. Yeah. Another beautiful way of saying it. Two different nice ways of putting it.
Do you notice that we're having a conversation and we have never once tried to defend or talk about our? I mean, we're trying to integrate perspectives, but we're not having a conversation so much about
defensive.
Defensive conversation.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
There needs to be so much more of this, so those islands don't just drift apart.
Yeah,
from
I mean,
each
if
other.
Anything, we're finding that we've all got something really important.
Well, Stephen and I are trying to fight. We just can't get up to
you
it.
Guys,
I know.
Come on.
A thought entered my mind about that. You're mentioning the shrinking attendance at major astrology conferences.
Evidently, that seems to be true.
I think it is true.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if one element there is that somebody comes to like this UAC, for example, and they're just overwhelmed with all these diverse viewpoints, and there's no cohesion.
Yeah, right.
And it becomes overwhelming and confusing and not the kind of experience they would want to repeat. The answer isn't that we need one true astrology.
Yeah.
You know, obviously that's not going to happen and it shouldn't happen. But we've got this huge dilemma, and my sense is that it's gonna be like Buddhism coming to the West. It's gonna take astrology 300 years, you know, to absorb all these different viewpoints and maybe turn them into something cohesive, but what that will look like, I have no idea.
Yeah.
Well, this meeting was your brainchild that started when Steve and I were corresponding about how education is done and so on. And at one point, Steve said, we ought to catch this on tape. And I emailed back and said, well, we can get Kelly. You're going to take for us. And so here we are. So
much easier than email.
Yeah, my fingers get tired after about 2,000. So, you know, maybe what you have invented here is one of the big keys. Maybe Kelly needs to have a series of these.
Yes.
You know,
where
he'll get a Hellenistic and a whatever. And, you know, we weren't very good at arguing with each other. Maybe he'll do better with the next group.
Yeah.
But, you know,
or
getting...
maybe they won't argue. They'll just listen. You know,
exactly.
Really
but I feel that we have really come to some understandings. I've learned, I think we have all learned, some things about what each other's doing and also what astrology is. I think I'm understanding it a little bit better. And a lot of things that, you know, you can know something intuitively, but you never get to talk about it.
Yes.
So it rumbles around unconsciously.
That's exactly
but bringing
right.
that to say what our experiences are in astrology and all this, you know, to make that at a verbal level, for me, this has been wonderful.
This is
so many hidden awarenesses coming together and
about
seeing how they relate.
Integration. Yeah. We don't all have to be alike, but we bring it together in an integrated, holistic way when we talk, communicate in person.
Yeah. Are we coming to a close? Does it feel like that?
Feels like it.
Yeah.
We're getting near time that Giselle has to run for.
So is this all perfect?
Yeah, it sounds perfect.
Should we? I think that maybe was an excellent
way to finish.
Yeah,
wasn't
I
it?
Think so. Well, thank you, Kelly.
Kelly!
Hey, thank you. Love to serve. Love to serve.
FindAnAstrologer.com, the best astrologer database online. Search astrologers' bios, events in your area, featured articles, book reviews, blogs, MP3 downloads, video downloads, resources, and interviews. FindAnAstrologer.com. Illuminate your journey.